I told you several times. They showed me reams of scripture. I can show it to you in the Bible. I mean, it just flat says it. And indicates that when God gets ready to do what he's going to do in what we call the tribulation period, he's going to use the natural elements of his own earth to fulfill his own prophecy by his own power. If God allowed man to develop thermonuclear weapons, which man did, then God chose to use them to fulfill his own prophecy. Well, certainly I can understand people interpreting the Bible that way, but that is not what the Bible indicates. When this is all over, God himself will be responsible for doing the destroying, not thermonuclear weaponry. I teach physics, I teach chemistry, I teach a lot of different things. And the things that God has available in his arsenal are far greater than ours. This is God's earth. It's the way it is today. You say, I believe in God. I believe God created the heaven and the earth. Well, God also created what you see right here on the screen. This is not theoretical. It's not a hypothesis. It's not something that is a premise. It's the truth. We've checked this all out, and we've checked it out through seismic tomography, which is earthquakes, the waves that travel through the earth, and are recorded. We know exactly what the earth looks like inside from seismic tomography, and we know that everywhere you see a red line on this chart, these cracks weave their way erratically down through the earth, and we know that they all make contact with these great underground liquid lakes of rock called magma. We know this because through satellite laser analysis and through spectrographic analysis, that these plates do actually move. They float on the underground liquid lakes of rock called magma. And it is a theory, a premises, a hypothesis, an idea. It's not an opinion. These produce over 95% of all the world's earthquakes. That's not a theory, that's a fact. And they produce over 90% of the fire and brimstone that comes down out of heaven in the form of volcanic eruptions. In the Bible, I suppose if it had used three different words for heaven, we could have been more definitive. But the Bible indicates, using the word ouranos, that God considers the entire structure of the universe divided into three heavens. God made it. He can put it any way he wants. There's the atmosphere around our planet. A lot of preachers call it where the birds fly, but actually it extends further than that, out to the exosphere. And that atmosphere is called ouranos. In the Bible, it's translated heaven. There is another word, the same word, identical word, ouranos, that refers to the actual sun, moon, and stars. And then there's another ouranos that applies to the place where God dwells. So in the book of Revelation, in many cases, it's not referring to the heaven where God dwells. It's referring to this first heaven around the earth where the planets, not the planets, but where the atmosphere of the earth exists. God moves this structure and has moved it many times in the past. He will continue to move it, and it produces the world's earthquakes and the world's volcanic eruptions. It produces the world's fire and brimstone. Last Wednesday night, I went through a very detailed, absolute linguistic proof of precisely what everything was from Revelation 8 to 5 all the way down to verse 8. And we went into verse 9 and verse 10. I'm 71 years old. I've issued an open challenge to any preacher in this country, any preacher, to challenge me on this and to show me where I use the words in an incorrect linguistic manner. Some people don't agree with me, but I guarantee you I've never been challenged, because the words that I look up are in the oldest lexicons. They're the most highly definitive that exist, and so I prove everything I say. Now, one of the reasons that I'm sure of what I present is because it's linguistically correct. Another is because of the result and action of what this says happened. And the third is the fact that the Bible is very clear, I believe, that God's power is a powerful thing, and I believe he will fulfill his own prophecy by his own power. Now, we went right down to here, and we had the third part of the sea becoming blood. I went through a dissertation on the word hamar, hamati. I proved it to you from the oldest lexicons and the most modern lexicons and the most authority that are in print today and were in the past. And the original granddaddy lexicon, Lydell and Scott, from which all the lexicons of today came. That word blood is hama, at times hamati. They both mean the same thing. It can be real human blood. It can be animal blood. It can be bird blood. God created an animal kingdom. He created a feathered kingdom. He created a human kingdom. He created a botanical kingdom. And he created the earth. Since God created them all, and since they all contain a blood-red liquid, you will discover the companion word in the Old Testament, dam, is used for the blood-red liquid in a Hebrew grape. You'll discover in the New Testament that the word hamar, hamati, is used for any object that takes on a blood-red color, such as the moon. You'll also discover that it refers to the blood of birds, the blood of animals, and the blood of grapes, and the blood of the earth. And it merely means simply this, any liquid having a blood-red color. So I went through and I took you all the way down to where, why the water turned to blood-red, and why it actually smothered out the aquatic life. I went through and showed you the actual chemical process of every volcanic eruption, made a case to prove to you these plates moving on the ocean seafloor, two-thirds of them exist, would present a shield of an orange color that would actually take the oxygen out of the water. And this isn't something that's predicted. This is something that happens all the time. But during the tribulation period, it's going to be extremely volatile in that many volcanoes will be breaking out on the ocean seafloor. Now tonight, I'm going to take verse 9. And a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. So whatever this is that turns the sea blood red, not only takes the oxygen out of the water and causes aquatic life to die, but it not only turns the water blood, but actually it's interesting as to another phenomena that God generated that's very, very real. These are dinoflagellate. How many of them are there? There are more dinoflagellate in the oceans and seas of the world than there are specks of sand on all the beaches on the surface of the entire earth. I mean, they are extremely numerous. And there are certain types of dinoflagellate that there's a certain thing you must never, never, never do in an area where they're able to turn themselves into something that is perhaps the most treacherous thing in the sea. They're dinoflagellate. And there are some varieties of them that do some very terrifying things. Normally, they are not a red color. But when a certain thing happens in the water, which I'll cover later, they turn the water blood red, and they produce red tides. Most people don't know where the University of Alabama got its name. They call them the Crimson Tide, rolling and sweeping over everything in their path. And they have an elephant for a mascot. But their mascot really is the dinoflagellate, because that's what produces the red tide that kills the aquatic sea life down along the coast of southern Alabama and all the way down the Florida coastline and all over the world in certain areas where the dinoflagellate exist. And they exist over any section that is warm. Red tides. Well, God made dinoflagellate, and God made the process whereby they do exactly what they're supposed to do. And he indicated in the book of Revelation, whatever this was going to turn the water blood red, and whatever it was going to kill a third of the aquatic creatures. The dinoflagellate produces the red tide. Now, dinoflagellate can also cause problems for humans. Under certain conditions, a population explosion of red poisonous dinoflagellates take place in marine waters. This is called a red tide. It kills thousands of fish. I'm going to correct that because it would be more proper to say it kills billions of fish, because it is a well-known factor that has killed billions of fish along coastal sections of all the world in shallow offshore waters where a certain phenomena occurs, and bingo, when it occurs, they begin to spread and kill aquatic life in an unbelievable manner. The dead fish wash up on beaches and pollute some of our recreational areas. Now, God made dinoflagellate. God made magma. He made the ocean seafloor basaltic magma. He made the process of eruptions coming up out of the earth. And two-thirds of these cracks that produce volcanoes are on the ocean seafloor. Under certain conditions, it reproduces at a fantastic rate. And it is fantastic. 60 million have been counted in a single quart of seawater. 60 million dinoflagellate in a single quart of seawater. That's a lot of dinoflagellate in just a quart. The oceans and seas of the world are full of them, and God made every little microscopic scop of them. The organism tends to utilize the dissolved oxygen at a rate which creates an aerobic condition. As it turns the water red, it takes the oxygen out of the water. And the fish can't live because without oxygen to breathe through their gills, they're gone goslings. Thus, aerobic organisms such as fish die. It also releases an airborne poison gas which irritates the human respiratory tract and may cause coughing, sneezing, and even shortness of breath. During the red tide off the coast of Florida in 1952 and again in 1954, enormous numbers of fish died. The shore was littered for miles with stinking fish. Another dinoflagellate, gommiolux, also causes water to appear a rusty red at times because of its great numbers. Gommiolux catenella is known to have been the cause of disastrous poisoning in man. Several kinds of shellfish along the Pacific coast feed on them, thus making the shellfish poisonous for human consumption. In 1941, there were 346 cases of poisoning with 24 deaths. Since 1941, state laws forbid the gathering of shellfish during the season of the red waters. How toxic is it? Experiments have shown the toxin alkaloid to be about 10 times as potent as strychnine, which is used for poisoning mice. People are always looking for something that's sensational. This is probably one of the most sensational things I've got in my entire lecture series, and it's probably the thing that can be proven to the greatest extent because of the availability of them and what they do to water. This is what a population explosion of dinoflagellate produce. They turn the water red, and they take the oxygen out of the water, and they kill aquatic life. God made them. God made the process. Red tide phenomena. These are dangerous sea creatures, a complete guide to hazardous marine life by Thomas Helm. The people who wrote these are probably not even Christians. They're probably not even believers. They are very objective people. And I wish they were Christians, but in a way, it's advantageous because they're not trying to prove anything in the Bible. Red tide phenomena. The red tide, as we know it today, is primarily restricted to salt water. Outbreaks are, however, a worldwide occurrence. Here's something that's very interesting. It is interesting to note that no ingested food has been isolated, suggesting that it is quasi-biologic, obtaining its substance in the manner of green plants. And here's the most important thing. It survives in nutrient-poor water. It survives in nutrient-poor water. Why is that interesting? Because the process I described to you last Sunday night is dependent upon the oxidation of the iron content in basaltic magma, which is the highest of the three that God produces in the earth, basaltic, which is the only type you find on the ocean seafloor. So oxidation or rusting, instantaneous rusting due to sudden exposure of it's a rhyolitic type of iron ore, hematite, it's hematite in the magma, and it instantly turns the water red, and it takes the oxygen out of the water. This thing can exist in that sort of a situation. So these two processes can exist together. They both turn the water blood red, and they both kill aquatic life. You would almost think that God knew that. And you would almost think that these scriptures were put in the Bible so in the last days we could understand it. Think about those scriptures. Just think about them. Think about people back in 300 AD, 1000 AD, 2000 AD. Think about people in 1800, in 1900. They didn't need to know this. They didn't know it. Look at what the Bible said. It said that aquatic life would be destroyed. It said it would turn the water blood red. It said there would be a great burning mountain of fire in the sea. In the event before it, on the blowing of the first trumpet, it said, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth. And all the green grass was burnt up in a third of the trees. So what does it matter to them what it is? It's what God said. And whatever it was, they could tell it was horrifying. But to this generation, the last generation, which is so supercritical and cynical of everything in the Bible, I think God revealed more of his word to this last generation than any other generation, because quite frankly, we need it. When I was a young man, I could have cared less about what that was. I just knew it was super bad. But it's mighty nice to know in these last days that there are some specifics on it and that they're extremely interesting. The red tide. Fish are killed not by the thousands, but by the thousands of tons. They're killed by the billions and by the thousands of tons. Some years ago, when the civilized world was becoming increasingly concerned with man-made pollution of air, land, and water, there was a loud hue and cry by those who believe the red tide was the direct result of the wanton discharge of human agricultural and factory waste that flowed into the Gulf. When these things first started occurring in abundance, all the environmentalists who want to save everything determined it was man that was doing this. I have repeatedly, from the first day I began this lecture series 27 years ago, made this point. When this occurs, it will not be because of man creating the situation that God used. It will be because of man's immoral condition that the judgment comes, but it will be by the power of God. So that's what everybody thought at first. But with the passage of time, it didn't take long to discover it would have been almost been a blessing if this were so. If it were so, it would have been a potent weapon in the hands of those interested in preventing the human race from destroying itself by pollution. Heedless as man may be of fouling his environment, there is no clear-cut evidence to prove that he is responsible for the red tide. Now get this. It seems indeed to be a destructive phenomena created solely by nature. Nature? Who made the earth? Who controls nature? Who unleashes nature? God. When God gets good and ready, he's going to cut loose with these eruptions on the ocean seafloor, and he's going to create just exactly what he said by his own power and fulfill his own prophecies by it in the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period. The recovery time is surprisingly fast once the trouble has subsided. That's interesting. It means that after all these are killed and the Lord returns at the same event, everything will very quickly return to normal. You'd almost think God planned that when he made the dinoflagellate. I think we've shortchanged God. I just put it to you this way. You may think you know what you're doing, and I may think I know what I'm doing, and everybody on this planet may think they know what they're doing. But God is the only one who knows what he's doing. He's the only one who knows everything past, present, and future. And my confidence is entirely in him and in his ability not only to save me by grace through faith and keep me by grace through faith, but to bring all this by his own power. And I think he's already structured creation in such a way to do it. I don't think those lines are there by accident on the ocean seafloor. I don't think he created dinoflagellate the way they are, except possibly for this end time event. This is interesting. Now, this man is not a Christian. If it should ever become widespread over the oceans of the world, it can conceivably put an end to all fish life. So this is no little small unimportant thing. These things, silver has been shocked by some recent research findings that have turned up new killer organisms, vanishing villain. New species of dinoflagellate kill fish, then disappears into the sediments. North Carolina State University traced fish kills to a one-cell supervillain that quickly kills its victims with a powerful neurotoxin, reproduces into large number, then vanishes into a resting state in sediment. Phantom is responsible for 25% of fish kills in North Carolina. They believe it is guilty of many unsolved kills elsewhere. Remember that picture that Alfred Hitchcock made called The Birds? Those birds actually went out and ate some of the things that had been infected by this poison, and they themselves went mad. And so what Alfred Hitchcock produced was an actual occurrence, something that really happened when the birds went crazy. Red menace in the world's oceans. Rising tide. Red tide moved from Florida to North Carolina, killing fish with bravado toxin. Health and Welfare, Canada. The dimeric acid was traced to a bloom of diatoms, golden brown algae once thought innocent of all toxicity. In 1990, the most confirmed outbreak was traced to dinoflagellates in Canadian waters. The Red Sea is probably named after these noxious argal blooms, some of which pack a poison that can kill a human in hours. New types of toxins are appearing, and known algal killers are extending their reach to new regions of the world. Previously unknown organisms and organisms thought to be harmless have just exploded, says plankton ecologist Don Anderson. Why this burst of activity? No one knows for sure. Many scientists believe that these algal species have long been around in small numbers as part of what plankton ecologists call the hidden flora. We're seeing new kinds on the block now, but they probably were there before. The question is, why are they blooming now? This is a dinoflagellate explosion. This is what they do to fish. Millions, billions of fish thrown up all along the shoreline because of the red water tide. This is probably that sort of looks like you, doesn't it? He's holding his nose. Why do you think he's holding his nose? He probably just heard the preacher give a bad sermon. You reckon? There's a lot of dinoflagellate there. Look at those fish. Billions of them. He can destroy tons of fish. Now, this is what's interesting. Even the shark, it's a cartilage type of fish, capable of withstanding punishment that would kill true fish almost instantly, will die if the concentration becomes too intense. Now let's just talk about what causes these to suddenly explode. Some investigators are keeping close check on the change of water temperature in hopes of finding a way to accurately predict when an outbreak can be expected. Volcanic activity. I've showed you all the graphs and charts on it and how it's increasing. You can do a lot of things to dinoflagellate. Won't affect them at all. They won't start putting out the toxin. They won't turn the water blood red. They're normally harmless little creatures. But there is one thing you must never, 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 never do. Heat the water. If you heat the water, they suddenly begin to explode in population. They spread out. They turn the water blood red. Volcanic eruptions on the ocean seafloor have been increasing significantly. I've shown you that in statistics on various charts with the passage of time. And the warming of the ocean water above these cracks is producing these outbreaks. During the tribulation period, you're going to have these things break open. Now, I haven't done this lecture, this particular part of the lecture. The first time I did it was 1978, a long time ago. And ever since then, I've been doing a different lecture series. This is a two-week-long lecture series, actually a three-week-long lecture series. And so the last time I did this thing was a long time ago. But in 1970, they had 18 dinoflagellate outbreaks. In 1990, they had 46. They've been keeping them up ever since. But I haven't kept track of it because I haven't presented this particular lecture in a long time. Revelation 8, 8 and 9. And the second angel sounded, as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast to the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of ships were destroyed. When these particular things explode, you're going to have the plates move. You're going to have a fantastic increase in the number of volcanic eruptions on the ocean seafloor. You're going to have the magma coming up, making direct contact with the water, directly heating it. It comes up sometimes as high as 2,000 degrees centigrade, 1,600 to 2,000 degrees centigrade. It comes up and touches the water and begins to make contact, and it heats it above all these cracks. You're going to see chains of volcanic eruptions on the ocean seafloor all over the earth. You're going to see massive chains of them. You're going to see that water heated in a fantastic way that it's never been heated before. Only God can do this. No one else can. Only God can move these plates to the extent that it would produce precisely what he's indicated will occur in the tribulation period. The warming of this water is interesting. See these right here? They're the ocean currents of the world. God put them there. They're standard ocean currents. They used me as an oceanographer in the National Security Agency. That's a part of meteorological training. I was an oceanographer, I was a synoptic analyst, and I was a meteorologist in the National Security Agency. And one of the things about the ocean, if all of a sudden something went down in a certain area, they would call me and I would have to come in the dead of night. And they'd say, we have such and such an object down at such and such a place. They'll say, we want you to give us a prognosis, a forecast of where it will be in 12 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours, and 72 hours. I would have to take these ocean and sea currents, and we have them all over the earth. They're very accurate, and they're very dependable. And I would have to take the sail surface exposed of the object, and then I would have to take the actual reports we had from ships in that area and synoptically draw the lines to depend on the gradient. The wind coming across to where the object was and the air above it would push on the sail surface, the currents would move it in this direction, and we had to consider the fetch, the length of the area, that's the fetch area, and I could tell them where it would be in those time periods. God made these, very reliable. So when all these dinoflagella are produced along all these green lines due to heating, then they're going to be carried away from the source, and eventually they're going to cover a large portion of the ocean, about one-third of it, and they're going to destroy all of the aquatic life as they're carried away from the source. Between what I showed you last Wednesday night on the what is known as inorganic substances that are released from these volcanoes through oxidation, rusting instantaneously and turning the water blood red, and what I've shown you on the dinoflagellates tonight, it gives you a better perspective of how God uses his creation to fulfill his own prophecy by his own power. Now, Lord willing, next Wednesday night, well, I won't be here next Wednesday night, but the Wednesday night after that, I'm going to Michigan. I'll be up in on the coast there. Can't think of the name of the place. With Mick Schmidt, Missionary Baptist Church there. This one here was something that really baffled me. It's a good thing I had to take courses in oceanography. And God pushed me into that because I didn't really want to be an oceanographer. But anyway, it's a good thing I did. But this was very mysterious to me. Why would it destroy a third part of the ships? Because I knew about volcanic eruptions in the midst of the sea. They don't destroy ships. Ships can avoid those. And even if they come up in great numbers. So there was something about this that was just mysterious to me. And finally, I figured it out. At least I thought I did. But any time you figure something out, if you can't prove it to yourself genuinely and then validate it by an outside source, then it's not worth much. So Lord willing, next Wednesday night, I'll cover how the third part of the ships were destroyed. I think you'll find it very interesting. And in order to discover how this happened and the process that was used, in order to validate what I had found, and I still have the telegram over here in the house somewhere, but I've got it in file, I had to go to Lloyd's of London, and I had to ask Lloyd's of London a question. I did a lot of work and research on this. I contacted the U.S. Navy. They didn't want to give me much information. I even tried to contact the Soviet Navy. They wouldn't give me anything. So finally, I said I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I thought of Lloyd's of London, because I knew that Lloyd's of London actually insured most of the world's shipping. So the hypothesis and the thing that I had worked up about how this would happen depended on one single solitary thing. And if that was true, then all the other things had to be true. And sure enough, Lloyd's of London validated it, and they said, you are correct. And then I knew for sure exactly how the one-third of the ships will be destroyed. And it's by the power of God. It's not by man's power. You know, we all think that we're just a little bit smarter than the average bear. Not everybody, but most people do. I spent my young life sitting on schools and getting degrees and all that wonderful, marvelous stuff. I used to think I was a pretty smart bear. But the more I came to understand the scriptures, and the more I got to develop a personal relationship with God, I understood what he meant when he said, after you have done all things, say, I'm an unprofitable servant. That means not needed. That's what the word unprofitable means in the language. God doesn't need you. God doesn't need me. We need God. I really feel sorry for someone who has a high opinion of themselves. I mean, I absolutely feel sick and sorry for them. Because the only person that I know that I have a high opinion of is God. I have a very high opinion of God. But I don't have much of a high opinion of anybody else, certainly including myself. So the most important thing in life is not how many degrees you have. It's not how smart you think you are. It's not how clever you think you are. It's not how much you think of yourself. It's what you think of God. I'm just a little, small, frightened, helpless child. What are you? I'm just a little, small, helpless, frightened child. How do you feel about yourself? See, I can take care of myself. After you leave that body, who's going to take care of you? If a person goes through life and becomes the greatest man or the greatest woman who ever lived, and yet they haven't put their faith in Jesus Christ to save them from what they are, helpless, lost, sinful beings who have to have a Savior. That's the tragedy of the ages. Salvation is a matter of understanding that only God's Son can save you from hell, and that he died and suffered and bled on a cross for that very purpose. I thank God with all my heart that I can't save anybody. And I thank God from the depths of my soul that this church can't save anybody. And I thank God from all that's within me that no work, baptism, or anything else can save you. I thank God he put it all in Jesus. And I thank God you come to him as a little child. That's the only way. A little child, when he comes into this world, doesn't know anything. Doesn't know his own name until somebody teaches him. He depends on his parents to feed him and take care of him. If they don't, the child dies. That's why the kingdom of heaven is made up of little children. And yet so many people won't come to God his way. Except you come unto me as little children, you shall in no way enter into the kingdom of God. I'm glad God made it that way. What I've shown you here is God's power, but just a smidgen of it. If God can create this earth, if God can tell us what's going to happen, and then God himself perform it, and if Jesus Christ has all the fullness of the Godhead dwelling in him, I'll have a thing in the world to worry about. And neither does anyone else that believe that. I hope each one of you sitting here tonight can say in your heart, yes, I know Christ as my Savior. If you can't, it's your fault that you don't. He just wants you to come to him like a little child that needs a Savior. Brother Charles Trust.